Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. This is a really special episode, and I am doing something very different. Different is good. And I am having this very special interview with my daughter, Ava. Ava is now 17, and we started treating her Lyme when she was 14. So, couple things before we get into it today. You know, my goal for this episode is to share with you all the treatment that we did. So many different things, and it seemed like at the time it would never stop. But one of the biggest questions I get today is, what did you do? So I really want to share with you all of the big players in our journey. At the same time, Ava really wanted to share with you, the moms and the caregivers out there, she wanted to share with you her experience as the child, as the patient, as the person who went through all of this treatment so that we can all have a better understanding of this experience through the lens of the child, through the lens of the person going through all of this, which I think is so helpful. Now, obviously, we all have unique journeys. Your journey is different from our journey. So just take what resonates with you. Your experience is going to be different, but there are definitely going to be pieces of this interview that might really hit home for you. Now, I can't really start to share our story without bringing you to the beginning. And how we actually got to Lyme disease is through psychiatric issues and severe mental health issues. And that is the painful reality of our story. So Ava experienced anxiety, debilitating OCD, body dysmorphia, which led to an eating disorder, suicidal ideation, hallucinations, and severe tics. There was a lot of psychiatric issues. It can be so triggering for us to even talk about, but we definitely did our best in this episode. And I just really need to emphasize to so many parents out there that these issues 100% can be related to Lyme and the many co-infections, including Bartonella and Babesia. When you hear Ava today, you hear a person who healed through all of that. Today, she does not have debilitating anxiety. She actually doesn't really even have an eating disorder anymore. She manages her OCD, but she goes to school. She has a part-time job. She has meaningful friendships. She has her life back. I don't even know if I heard her tick in this episode. So even her ticks have completely diminished. It's amazing. When your child heals, they go above and beyond your greatest expectations. And I can't wait for you to hear Ava's story. So as I mentioned, our journey into Lyme actually started with my daughter's eating disorder. I picked her up from camp one summer where she actually did get bit by ticks and she had lost a lot of weight. And we had learned that she had an eating disorder. So this segment in our interview, my daughter and I are talking about her experience in a partial hospitalization program. She also talks about the red flags of therapists. We did so much family therapy. We had some great therapists, but we also had some bad therapists. And we talk about the gaslighting that had occurred. It was really damaging to my daughter. And thank goodness we were in treatment to kind of reverse the damage of gaslighting by therapists. It doesn't really look like what you think it would. Sometimes when our therapists tell us that our children are being overly dramatic or our child is seeking attention, these are really big red flags, especially in our world of pans and lime. So something to look out for. And you'll hear that in this portion of the interview. Did you find the partial hospitalization program helpful? And if so, how was it helpful? And if it wasn't helpful, how was it not helpful?
I think it was helpful overall just for my anorexia, but it didn't really help me that much in other areas. I do think that the practitioners were empathetic, and I'm sure they cared about their patients, but something, just the way that they interacted with me, didn't feel very compassionate. And just being in PHP, and specifically that program, actually ended up lowering my self-esteem quite a lot, even though I did recover from anorexia due to it.
Got it. I hear you. So even though it helped with your anorexia, there were other parts that were not helpful.
Correct.
We also started working with a therapist, and we've had different therapists in the journey. Tell me about the best therapist you ever had, and why was this person effective?
The best therapist I had would actually listen to me, because I had a previous therapist who didn't listen to me at all and essentially doubted everything that I told her and just didn't really believe me. She was worse than that, but I don't want to get into it. But the best therapist understood that I know what's best for me, even though I don't always know what to do in a given situation, because of course, I don't know, because I'm the one experiencing it and I don't fully understand it myself. But he did understand that if I had a suggestion or something that I knew would make me feel better or help me in any way, that should be taken seriously. And I think that especially in terms of mental health, people don't take a patient's recommendation seriously because they just view them as deranged or not credible or not reliable as a source. But they're actually, in some ways, the most reliable source because they are the only ones who know what's going on in their heads. So I greatly appreciate that the therapist actually listened to me and took my advice and my recommendations about what would make me feel better as a patient and just in general.
Yes, he was very gifted at that. And he taught me to listen to you. So I was very, very grateful that he opened my eyes to that. What are some red flags that we need to be aware of for therapists that are ineffective or could be damaging?
Definitely therapists, especially for patients with psychosis, which I had, therapists that try to make it seem like their patient is just being overdramatic and, again, not taking them seriously. And I think that, again, is very frequent when it comes to patients with psychosis or some sort of delusion, that area of mental illness and that area of mental health, people just don't take those types of patients seriously, even practitioners and professionals. So if a therapist is directly saying or in any way implying that a patient is being overdramatic, then I think that's vile and they're just not a good therapist, because they should be taking their patient seriously because their patient is suffering and they're not being overdramatic. So invalidating one's patient's feelings, that's incredible red flag.
I agree. Okay, thank you so much. Let's talk about treatment for a little bit. Thankfully, we were able to get you tested and you were diagnosed with Lyme disease. I think at the beginning, babesia, tick-borne relapsing fever. And right off the bat, we worked with one practitioner that diagnosed you, and then we transitioned to another integrative doctor. But I feel like both of their treatments were kind of the same, where you took antibiotics and herbs. How were you feeling at this point? Did you find that these types of treatments were effective?
I don't think they were, in my experience, effective with curing me to any extent. I do remember there being subtle changes or some types of changes, specifically in the earlier phases, which was a long time ago, so I don't remember the specifics exactly. But I do remember there being some small changes, but I can't recall the specifics.
Yes, I remember there were little wins at the beginning when we actually were treating for babesia and you were on this thing called Mepron, and there were some slight wins there. So I do remember that. Overall, it was like different antibiotics and also herbs. Do you think it helped you improve 10%,
50%? Kind of like, what would your measurement be of that? That's something that we did for a good, I would say 9 months. What would you say in that time period?
There were so many antibiotics and things I was on that I honestly can't really decipher what was doing what. Mm-hmm. At this point, I can't really give a percentage.
Okay.
But I can say that the most recent herbs, I think, were the most effective for me.
Oh, okay. We'll definitely get into that. The most recent herbs. Okay. I agree with you. I think at this time, after these like 9 or 10 months of our traditional treatment, I really wasn't seeing improvement. And this is when I started exploring whole body hyperthermia at Sanaviv. It seemed like a very drastic thing to do. And I read up on it, did research, talked to 3 other people that had had it done. And then I know together we made the decision to try it. So just for people who are not familiar, whole body hyperthermia is when you heat the body up to 107 degrees. Technically, it's between 107 and 109 Fahrenheit. We went to Sanaviv Medical Institute in Mexico for this procedure. It is a hospital. My daughter was 15 at the time. And the reason I chose to do this was we needed help. We needed help badly. She had been in treatment with various antibiotics and herbal protocols for about 9 months. And not only did we plateau, but we started sliding backwards. And I think we started seeing the consequences of being on antibiotics too long. My daughter also developed POTS. In addition, we didn't know this at the time. We were living in a home that had mold. And we were in lockdown at this period. And my daughter entered fall doing remote learning, and the mold exposure and not getting outside of the home really took a toll on her health and flared her Lyme and Babesia. So we decided to do whole body hyperthermia, which kills Borrelia. At Sanaviv, they also folded in a lot of other protocols. They gave her IV Rocephin as well as IV Artesanate to treat her Babesia. It is a plant medicine that also kills malaria. Ultimately, whole body hyperthermia did kill my daughter's Lyme and Babesia. They also folded in IV glutathione, high doses of vitamin C, some sessions of hyperbaric chamber, IV ozone. For 2 weeks, you get a detox diet, lymphatic massage, and they really kind of threw everything at it to help her detox and build up her immune system. At Sanaviv Medical Institute, the program includes 2 rounds of whole body hyperthermia. So there is a protocol before you do hyperthermia, and then a protocol to detox you after you do whole body hyperthermia. And here is our part of the interview where we talk a little bit more about this process. Can we talk a little bit about whole body hyperthermia?
Sure. At Sanaviv specifically, I wouldn't say it was nice because it was a very difficult experience. I think some people would view it as a vacation in some sort of way, but it wasn't because it was just testing and treatment all day and getting IVs for hours, like a grand portion of the day and other things. But I will say that the people there were very kind and genuinely compassionate and caring towards the patients. So even though it was a very difficult experience, that made it a bit better, because if they weren't compassionate, then it would have been very even damaging mentally, even though it was physically beneficial. So I'm glad that they were so nice.
Yes, they were very nice. And it does. I understand what you mean. It looks like paradise. It's in this beautiful healing resort style scenery, but it is a hospital. And so anything you needed or any type of pain you'd have, they did offer relief because they were staffed like a hospital. And I was very thankful for them because I needed help too in learning how to be more compassionate and all that stuff. Did you think, so you did whole body hyperthermia, the actual procedure, 2 times. Was it painful? Did you feel awful afterwards? Do you remember anything in that nature?
No, because I was under anesthesia and it was kind of nice. I wouldn't say nice, but I liked being asleep for so long. I wish I could give more details about how it felt to be in hyperthermia, but I couldn't because I was asleep. But I can say right before the first one, it was very scary because I obviously didn't know much about the procedure. I mean, I knew about this procedure, but I didn't know how it would feel. And I didn't really feel anything because I was under anesthesia. And then the second time going into it, I just felt fine. In all honesty, I think the hyperthermia days were probably the easiest because you just slept all day and the rest of the evening. So hyperthermia itself wasn't difficult, I would say personally, just because you were essentially unconscious the whole time. But the preparation for it and then I think the detox after were comparatively more difficult.
Yes. Yes, those were difficult. And I remember you, before you did whole body hyperthermia, there were a couple of days where they gave us a wheelchair or some type of walking, kind of like a walker to help you with the fatigue. And when you left, you did not need the wheelchair anymore. I don't know if you remember that. Are there other things that you're reminded of as far as like your physicality before you did whole body hyperthermia and after you did whole body hyperthermia?
Immediately before and after or over a long term?
Whatever comes to mind for you.
Well, immediately I just felt very drained, but it wasn't in any painful way. It was just draining, but not painful. But overall, I think hyperthermia was probably the most successful thing that I had tried. Even immediately, they could just notice the effects already. And it did help with my physical symptoms, such as fatigue, joint pain, weakness, etc. Some basically immediately, or almost immediately, alleviated was my psychosis, which was, and delusions, which were tied to the Lyme disease and bacterial infection in my brain. So I think that for my psychosis, it was incredibly effective and essentially reduced it to nothing.
So many people ask me today, what is the protocol for your kids now that they have recovered? And our biggest staple is Vital Plan Herbs. I even use them for my treatment. It's the only thing I use to treat my Lyme and I feel amazing. I am so grateful for Dr. Rawls and his brand because Vital Plan Herbs are clean, clean, clean. Because of this, my kids never experienced herxing. Low and slow is the name of the game here, and I successfully pulled my daughter off of antibiotics through the use of Vital Plan Herbs. The herbs that we are on are in today's show notes, and you can also use my promo code for 15% off. It's simply VeryHappy15. That promo code again is VeryHappy15. After my daughter had whole body hyperthermia, she was doing remarkably well. However, we did receive our mold results back. I had tested my home and I had also tested my kids weeks before we entered whole body hyperthermia. And when we got the results back, we realized that we had mold in the house and both of my kids were severely impacted. My daughter continued to do remote learning at home because of the pandemic, and she really parked herself in the mold-ridden basement. And so she started to experience some new symptoms a few months later. Yes, we remediated the home, of course, but she started developing severe ticks. And I took her to an allergist that was recommended to me by my LLMD at the time. And this allergist diagnosed my daughter with autoimmune encephalitis, as well as Sydenham chorea, which is a very specific type of autoimmune encephalitis. He didn't really offer her a healing protocol. He put her on a treatment program for acute stages. And this included baby Motrin, Zizol, Pepcid-AC, and then I also folded in CBD. We did see some improvement, and so we kind of bumped along for another month or two on this protocol. And at this time, my daughter went back to school part-time. This is kind of when things started opening up in our area. And while she was in school for just a short period of time, I would really call it like 7 weeks, she started exhibiting seizures, or what we thought were seizures. She was losing her ability to speak and losing her ability to walk. She would actually even shut down completely, eyes closed. It looked like she was asleep. So I believed that she was having epileptic seizures. I ended up taking her to a neurologist at NYU. At this time, I kind of didn't trust the regular hospital neurologists. I really wanted to go to somebody that understood Lyme and PANS and autoimmune encephalitis, and I found Dr. David Younger at NYU. So we flew out to New York. He tested her, doing a PET scan MRI and some various tests. Also, she was tested for seizures, and he determined that what she was experiencing were not seizures, but symptoms of her OCD and autism, as well as a very severe case of autoimmune encephalitis and PANS. So he recommended to us that she do weekly IVIG, and she was approved for neuropathy, which in essence is nerve damage created by the Lyme, the PANS, and these infections. So this is her story on her experience with IVIG. Let's chat a little bit about IVIG, because this is actually coming up more and more of a treatment that parents are exploring, and it is rather difficult these days to get approval for. So shifting gears to IVIG, let's talk about this a little bit. Was it painful for you?
No. I mean, it just felt like any other intravenous treatment. So, although I will say, just make sure that you're very hydrated, because you could get headaches easily from it, but it's avoidable if you just drink enough water and take a medication for it. So I think it helps with most with joint pain and also fatigue, which makes sense because it's specifically for peripheral neuropathy. So for joint pain, it was incredibly helpful for me. And I think that depending on how often you get it, because I wasn't really bothered by it physically at all because it was alleviating my symptoms. It was just, I guess, the mindset that it kind of brought with me. Because at first, initially, I was getting 3 to 4 hour IV every single week. And that kind of put me in the mindset of, I am such a patient. I am a patient and I am very sick because I'm getting this every week. And I'm sure that, of course, people get IVs a lot more frequently than that. And in comparison to other people, I wasn't actually in that much treatment, maybe. But I'm still, that's compared to the average American, that's kind of often to receive IV treatment. And even though people have it worse, I'm sure, and I'm not at all trying to invalidate their experiences or say that mine is worse. And I will say that it did, especially at the time, put me in the mindset of, I'm a patient and I don't know if I'll ever actually get better. That's just the mindset that it kind of put me in, just feeling mentally so sick because of the treatment that I had to receive. Although I will say that it was worth it still in the end.
Yes. Okay. And then I really appreciated you expressing how kind of taxing it was emotionally. And then we had shifted gears and we did it once a month. And then we could kind of tell when your body needed it. And so we ultimately settled in at every 3 weeks. So that, I believe, you know, parents working with their kids and having the conversation of like, how do you feel about it? I think it's so, so important. How did you know when it was time to stop IVIG? Or did you know?
I think it's once I stopped noticing as big of a difference, because I did notice some subtle differences. Like without it, I would be a little bit fatigued, but certainly not as much in comparison to before. I don't really know exactly how to describe it, but it was almost an instinctual thing, just recognizing that it's been so long since I have started, because I was over a year I had been on it. And I think that there was just a certain time where I recognized that it didn't help me as much as it did before. And it wasn't, not to say that it wasn't helping me at all anymore, just that I didn't need it anymore because of the place I was at. So
I think that's great. Yeah, you will come to that place. So I think that was wonderful that we were able to wrap it up. And I would even say we probably could have even wrapped it up a month or two before we finally did. So yeah, I think that we were listening to your body. So thank you so much. Any tips on when you had an IVIG day? You know, this is, it could be anywhere from 3 to 6 hours, depending on the dose for people. What are some things that you did or that you planned for on that particular day that helped you?
At first, I would watch or set aside specific movies to watch. Although after a certain amount of time, I just did homework. I'm not a very active person, so I just did anything else that I would be doing indoors on a typical day after a while. Although I will say the thing that I guess enjoyed most was eating special foods on IVIG days. So ice cream or food from a nice restaurant or Chipotle specifically. That was nice. So just eating fun foods or making sort of an occasion out of it. Not too grand of an occasion, but doing something fun or special just to cheer yourself up.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the comfort foods are super helpful, and I'm so grateful that you were able to get it at home. So anyone listening, there are some pharmacies that will allow for a home nurse, and your child could even do this in the comfort of their own room, which is such a blessing. Okay, let's move on, Ava, to kind of like the last phase of your treatment, where we ended up with the doctor that we have today, Dr. Bach. When we did more testing, he had kind of realized that you did have Bartonella and kind of put us back on a regimen that seemed pretty intense. So this portion of the podcast interview, we are going to be talking about Ava's last stage of treatment. Even though she was still receiving IVIG, she was still in a dark place. We ended up switching some of her psychiatric meds, and I really was seeing her needing to be back into active treatment, but I knew at the time I needed to find the right doctor. She actually had stopped going to school in November of her sophomore year, even though she was on IVIG. Thank God we did have the IVIG, but we really needed to get back into a protocol. And I did reach out to Dr. Kenneth Bach, the author of Inflamed Brain. He diagnosed my daughter with PANS again through the Cunningham panel, and he retested her with Igenix, and lo and behold, the Bartonella bacteria did finally come out. However, I do believe she had Bartonella the whole time, as she did have Bart marks on her body. It just wasn't showing up on testing. So Dr. Bach put her on a very specific protocol for the Bartonella as well as PANS and another protocol for the treatment of mold. We used antibiotics, we used a lot of anti-inflammatory supplements and an antifungal med for the mold in addition to binders. And again, she was doing all of this while she was still receiving IVIG. However, we did dial her IVIG back to monthly as opposed to weekly. They were just a little too intense. And she did finally start turning the corner. She never did actually go back into the physical school building. She completed her sophomore year, really from November all the way through May, remotely online. She did phenomenal, and it really ended up being her year of healing. So let's listen to this last portion of our interview. How did you feel about this treatment? Was it effective?
I think it was and is. I think that it certainly helped with feeling lightheaded, faint, the lingering amounts of joint pain that I still had. That I can't really say much about it in detail or retrospectively since I'm still being treated, but that's what I can say so far.
Yeah, yeah. And you did take so many pills. What do you have any tips or advice for taking pills and being on a protocol? I mean, even today you're not on any antibiotics, but we still take a lot of supplements and we take herbs. So do you have, like, what works for you to make this lifestyle easier?
I'm not sure because I don't like taking pills. I don't think I ever will be accustomed or get used to it at all, really. I mean, I think that I'm more used to it than I was before I was taking any pills, but I don't think I'll ever be fully comfortable with it. But I think just recognize that it might not always be that way. I mean, I think that some people will have to take pills, supplements maybe, for instance, for the rest of their lives, but I don't think that it'll be as many pills as it is as they are in treatment. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. And like, we've already dialed back some. You had mentioned at the beginning the herbs that you're taking now. These are the Vital Plan herbs that Dr. Bill Rawls created, and he's still on them. I take these herbs as well. How do these herbs make you feel?
Simply better. And again, there's a lot of supplements and things I'm on, so I don't know which things are alleviating specific symptoms generally, but I can say that I think that they do make me feel better and alleviate. Again, the general protocol just makes me feel, again, less lightheaded and alleviates that almost entirely and lingering joint pain and such.
I agree. You know, when you think about how you used to feel and how you feel today, what is the difference?
Better. The first thing that comes to my mind is that I feel a not overwhelming sense of peace, but a very prominent and noticeable sense of peace and just being very content with myself and life in general after treatment.
Wow. That is amazing. Are there any messages that you would like to share with kids that are still in treatment?
But it'll get better. I think it will. And I think that it won't be that way forever, essentially.
Yes, that's so, so true. And as we close out this interview, can you name a few things that you're grateful for today? I always talk about gratitude. Can you name a few things that you are grateful for today?
Anyone who's helped me at all. So that includes my family and doctors and friends and everyone. And I do want to say also that I think something parents need to recognize, and I think parents do so much for their children self-evidently, but I also think that sometimes how difficult it is for the parent, because I'm sure it's difficult, it can be easy to forget how difficult it is for the child as well. And I think parents need to, I guess, remember that no matter how difficult it is for them, it is exponentially more difficult for their child. So I think that, again, while parents, of course, do so much for their children, they also need to remember that their child is trying their best to cooperate and do what's best for the parent as well. So I think that while children should be grateful for their parents, parents should be grateful for the children as well.
That is so, so important and such a beautiful reminder. Thank you so much. I am so grateful that you did this interview, Ava. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much for listening. It is really hard to believe that even a year ago, Ava was experiencing tremendous tics and so much pain. And she healed, and you can hear it. And she also actually tests negative now through iGenics, if you can believe it. I know a lot of people are in remission, even though they still test positive, and you can still actually have antibody responses. But in our latest testing, she was negative. So I am so grateful for the team of doctors who helped us along the way, and also the therapists that really impacted our lives. I'm specifically grateful to the doctors at Sanavive, Dr. David Younger at NYU, Dr. Kenneth Bach, and Dr. Rawls for his vital plan herbs. In this podcast episode, you hear my daughter testify of the improvement she's experienced through vital plan herbs, and I take them too. My whole family is on them. I'm actually going to be dropping a new episode with Dr. Rawls in May during Lyme Awareness Month. And what I learned from him recently when I recorded that interview is the vital plan herbs and the mitochondrial support, the ingredients are super clean. And that's what makes his herbs different from other tinctures. You know, my kids were on other herbs, especially during the course of treatment in the early phases, and they did not feel well on those herbs. And it really does boil down to ingredients. So if this speaks to you, and if herbs speak to you, and if you have an intention to get your child off of antibiotics and onto herbs, these are something you could definitely fold in. I also have a coupon code of 15% off that you can find in the show notes. What I did specifically is I titrated my daughter up to the full doses of the vital plan herbs while she was still on antibiotics. And then we slowly took her off of the antibiotics while she was already on the herbs, and she didn't miss a beat. And that is the way I would recommend doing it. I hope you found this interview with Ava hopeful, inspiring, and uplifting. We have our own very happy story, and I know your family will have your own very happy story as well. And we will all heal one story at a time. Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. Or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.